Back Talk is an extension of the award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs on Friday on WCBE 90.5 FM. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, the podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
How sweet it is. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm Gary Hammond.
And this is Back Talk. Almost 3,000 years.
Yeah.
This story's been hanging about. It's called The Odyssey. Andropoi. Anapamusa. Palutrapon Hosmalapala. That's a Jesuit boy remembering only one line or opening line.
Yeah, after. But the Jesuits were good. They beat that into you, John.
They did.
You can call that up. Now, all these. It's not quite 3,000 years later, but it's a little bit later.
Yeah, only the Jesuits could have us translate thousands of lines. But yeah. I guess the important thing is that we have a new film today that we're discussing by auteur Christopher Nolan.
Yes.
It's called The Odyssey, and it's starring Matt Damon.
It is.
Now, what did our very difficult critic, Terry, your wife, what was her impression?
She did not favor the movie, and I said, and she said, you want to know why? And I said, no, thank you. I favored the movie very much. So, yeah, so she was.
And this is in the face of thousands of people who love the movie, so.
Well, is it art? Yeah, I would say it's art. Is it entertainment? Yes, it's entertainment. It depends on how you take it as far as that goes. You and I were debating Matt Damon as Odysseus before we saw the movie and afterwards. Yeah, he's good. He's really good.
He is good. He is still a disappointment to me. As you know, my choice would have been Hugh Jackman.
Okay.
And I think that there's something visually that goes here. I mean, in movies, visual is an important element.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think he has the visual composure. I think, for instance, you would have. It's one of the times when your height works in your favor.
Were the Greeks giants?
No, they were. You know, I'm not sure. It's a great question, counselor. But in my mind, I figure he would be bigger than most men, only because one of the superficial parts of heroism and the way that we tell stories.
But the hero's not a hero because he's a big, hulking
exactly.
thing. It's because of his inner being. And the other thing is, he had to fit inside the Trojan horse. they had that big guy, Shalonkin. And he would have taken the room of three men. And what happened if Shalonkin got killed? They would, they'd be down.
When they showed that one just barely peeking through the sand, the horse, the Trojan horse, which was the idea of that trickster, Odysseus. Mm-hmm. He was the one who got them inside the walls of Troy with that horse. It just didn't seem big enough to me either to hold all the guys who are going to bring down Troy. Easier to have just the face of Helen.
The face that launched 1,000 ships.
I know.
And actually, they were burned on the beach initially, so they had to build new ships in order to sail away over the 10 years, deforesting the Theban landscape.
So Christopher Nolan, who has brought us, for instance, Dunkirk, mm-hmm. is another beach kind of movie.
Yeah.
He is a man who knows how to deal with heroism. To me, there's a great deal of darkness in this film.
Well, there's dark times.
Yeah. And I think in the way that we tell the story, now this has been retold. In fact, it was never originally printed, obviously.
Right. The sun.
But it was mostly a story of adventure.
Of course, they were
wild-ass adventures.
Well, it's got a lot of lessons in it for people. They're contemporary lessons. They're lessons about ego and power and conflict. And when you said the oral tradition, I attended a oral storyteller at Ohio State campus where they have that sort of small Greek theater.
Yes.
And there was a woman that came out and talked for 2 hours straight.
Right.
No intermission. And she started off by talking about how she used to appear in much greater venues like Thebes and Rome and so on, thousands and tens of thousands of people. And it actually struck me when I was there and thinking about it after seeing this movie, that's a very powerful communication.
And I've heard that, and I don't know if it was at Ohio State, but I've heard where they've had several days of just reciting this poem.
Yeah.
So it's quite a magnificent production for me. Where I believe that Christopher Nolan brings his genius into this is a modern element of guilt. Would that make any sense to you?
I think it was in the book, though, too.
Do you?
Yeah.
And I've forgotten whether there is.
Yeah, he was trying to get home.
Yeah.
He was anxious to get home. And yet he goes off on these different frolics. Now, it's his men's decisions that mostly extended to 10 years, but in any event.
Yeah, when they decided, what did they decide, to listen to the sirens, or when they went to Circe?
They ate the cattle after they got
bad
through.
Boys.
It's like, oh! and then shooting to the eye of the Cyclops, that was Poseidon's favorite.
The fact that they had sharpened something like a gigantic pencil,
yes,
put it right into his eye. Probably Odysseus's thought that this would be a way for them. And so I didn't catch
it. That was the only way, because he was feeling the sheep, and if he saw that, he would have seen them. But he was
right. I don't know if they depicted it on the way out, but they hid under the...
In the story, they hide under the sheet. In the viewing of it, they tied straw to their backs, which I didn't understand.
I didn't either.
How that was going to work it out. And it was mostly that they scurried and watched for the big fingers. I mean, it looked like my hand on screen, John.
Yeah, it really did. It was one of the only parts of the movie that didn't fit quite right with what I knew to be their holding on to the undercarriage of the sheep.
Well,
so he would put his hand on top,
right?
But fail to think about covering underneath.
He's a Cyclops, John. He only sees. You know,
he didn't see.
Yeah.
I mean, they poked his eye out,
right?
Which was really a brilliant piece. And Odysseus was the one who thought up the idea of the horse. He's quite a guy, which strikes me as something of a comment on him that it takes him 10 years after that war to get home. What? Come on, boy.
Well, he is hanging out with a very attractive Charlize Theron for 7 years.
And she is good as what, Calypso? Charlize Theron, picking good one, counselor. I think she's really more outstanding than anybody. She gets a little more time. Zendaya plays Athena.
Mm-hmm.
And she's somewhat attractive, but I think Charlize has just got so much going for her. And I just wonder, boy, you with all of your genius, you can't get home. And you start thinking,
No. He went through trauma, John, and he forgot. He had amnesia that was induced either by the trauma or by Charlize Theron. But in any event, he begins trying to recover his memories, and when he does remember Penelope, and he does remember Telemachus, and he decides that he's got to go, and so he goes on a raft.
And you're reminding me that there's a couple of wars going on here. One of them is right in Ithaca, right in his own palace, with his wife Penelope, played fetchingly by Anne Hathaway, who doesn't seem to lack for roles these days.
She doesn't, and actually I couldn't think of another dramatic movie that I'd seen Anne Hathaway in. I'm sure that I have, but as I was preparing
Les Miserables.
Okay, there you go, okay.
Devil Wears Prada. She's in a couple of
roles. I remember that. That didn't strike me as a dramatic movie.
You think you see it as a comedy? You're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Well, let's just say of the roles that she's getting, I think of all these ingenues who are out there saying, give me a role? Can't you give me one of those roles?
Could you just let it go?
I know, right.
Well, and she played now a married lady with an adult son, so then she's starting to transition, maybe.
Yeah, and not a surprise is a very bad Antinous played by Rob Pattinson.
Yeah.
A long ways from the Twilight series.
Yeah.
And he plays a very bad boy in this one.
Yeah, well, vampire, bad boy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You can see that battle is a really tough one for Telemachus, the son, played by Tom Holland, who's not suffering no roles. He's going to be coming out next week with Spider-Man.
So, nobody's jealous, John.
I know it isn't, but it's just amazing to me. But he plays Telemachus, who's a weak son.
Yeah.
And he's physically weak and he's mentally weak.
He's small, John. Remember, back to that. And back to that, even Matt Damon wouldn't fit underneath a sheep running away from Cyclops. Just pointing out. But yeah, he's overwhelmed. He was a baby when his father left. And he's now these suitors have been there for decades, at least a decade. It seems like they moved in right away. But in any event, they've certainly been there for 10 years. There's all these conniving against him and he's always under attack and people are criticizing him. And he is a 20-something, but overwhelmed by all these
He comes
people.
Through for Dad toward the end.
He's an admirable character in what he does, but he's hard-pressed.
So Odysseus coming back home, I think, is really one of the more poignant parts of this film. And for those men of any age, at any time, in any of the millennia, who have jobs that take them away from home, this is certainly an interesting piece, leaving your wife and your children at home and going off, for instance, a movie star, for instance, and going off and doing your job. Who can blame them except that Nolan hits here what Homer was hitting here, which is the need to get home, you know, which is strong even in our Marvel studies these years. Most of your heroes are in one way or the other connecting with family and trying to get home.
Well, Christopher Nolan directed Inception, which is about Leonardo DiCaprio. He was a thief, and he went into people's dreams and stole their private information. But now he's a thief that he's planting things in there, and he's made a deal that otherwise he's going to go to jail or prison or whatever if he doesn't steal some information.
Yeah, Inception, good choice. Christopher Nolan seems to go for, even when he does Batman, he seems to go for the introspective.
Mm-hmm.
He goes for the heavy-duty themes, and I really appreciate it. All right, Gary Hammond.
Mm.
If people want to hear more, can you believe anybody would want to hear more of us? But if they do, they can go to WCBE.org.
You know, they might have done it until you said that, John. Go ahead. Okay.
Gary, what do you recommend concerning The Odyssey, starring Matt Damon and directed by Christopher Nolan?
I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it. I am going back and seeing it in IMAX just to get an idea of the film, because I haven't seen an IMAX movie in a very long, not since Avatar, I think.
We didn't see it. And the screens, for instance, we went at the Lennox. The standard screens are so big. I didn't even miss IMAX yet, because he filmed it all in IMAX. And just read a bit about the heroic struggle to
do that,
carry these 100-pound cameras.
It's like the Mona Lisa. You got to see it if you're in Paris. I mean, yeah. You just got to see it.
You may be right. It doesn't look like Terry will be going back.
I don't think so.
But if you do go
back,
we'll go. It's called The Odyssey, and it's directed by Christopher Nolan. Gary, I don't even know if we did mention the word epic.
We're going to.
Yeah, I think we should. First of all, let's define epic before
I'm prepared to define it.
Would you do that, please?
Because epic movie is characterized by massive scale, got that, sweeping scope, got that, visual spectacle, expansive settings, prolonged run times, grand musical scores, plot-centered heroes, journeying, historical events, fact, fiction, mythic conflict, destiny, turning point in history, and heroes. And I looked that up online. And then I looked for epics. Princess Mononoke, 1997, is an animation favorably compared to The Odyssey.
Really?
Yes. Not by me, but by the reviewers.
Yeah, oh.
Forrest Gump, with Tom Hanks, 1994. Yes.
Because of his adventures?
His adventures, his journey, his transformation.
You know, that's good. I hadn't thought about that one at all.
I'm thinking about it now.
I think because I don't consider him a grand character, but he is really in this story.
Well, he was heroic.
And he does turn out to be.
He actually showed up at the right time.
Yeah, he's so dweeby, though, for me. It's difficult for me to think of him as an epic hero.
All right. But then you were critical of Matt Damon for not being as tall.
I was.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Once Upon a Time in the West, Sergio Leone, 1968. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Sergio Leone, 1966. Apocalypse Now.
All right. Oh, now, stop right there. That's a good one.
Yeah. These are all good ones.
Well, that particularly fits our Odyssey, don't you think?
And going up the river and all. I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Right,
All that setup for it. But the journey up the river, trying to get to it, and what happens to him as he's surviving to get to Kurtz.
And don't you think that Kurtz is a Homeric bad boy?
Oh, yeah.
Talk about the Cyclops, when you're going to meet Marlon Brando playing that.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a great one. I like Apocalypse Now as a modern Odyssey.
He suggested that he come up out of the water in that scene. So,
yes.
Yeah. Right. Okay. The Human Condition is a trilogy by Kurosawa, 1959 to 1961.
Right.
Three chapters, three different
Not
movies.
Even think.
2001 A Space Odyssey, 1968, Stanley Kubrick.
You know, there's another good one. Kubrick has that massive scale and the adventure motif.
Mm-hmm.
He does have the epic quality. The problem with that is, as I recollect it, we don't really have a central figure. let's say beside a menacing
machine. It's actually
machine.
Dave. Dave is the central figure because everybody else has been killed off, and he has to overcome the monster that's Hal.
Yeah, and we see...
Dave, what's happening, Dave?
And we do see him very lonely at the end. Kubrick doesn't give him the scope of a character. Kubrick is so much interested in the visual of this that I question it, but I see where it comes from.
Lawrence of Arabia, are you going to fight with me on that one?
Hell no, man. Now, there is a true blue epic. You know, what makes it so?
Let's go to the deposition. Let's see. Massive scale.
Yeah, right.
Sweeping
desert.
Sweeping scope and visual spectacle. Expansive settings, prolonged run times. When I went as a child, yes, I was a child in 1962, we went to the theater in downtown Youngstown, the Palace Theater, probably, really big theater. There was an intermission. Mythic conflict, destiny, turning point, history. It was real history.
And a great hero.
Yeah.
Yes, and so much of what David Lean has is visually sumptuous and almost overpowering. There are shots for when Omar Sharif is coming over the horizon that are truly beautiful to behold.
And Lawrence riding out of the desert with the guy that he saved his life, and then 7 minutes later, the guy is executed. And Omar Sharif says, as I said, it is written. So, Gladiator 2000. All right. Well, I didn't say Troy with
Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt.
Yeah, as Achilles.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bit of a disappointment.
Yeah.
And again, I think casting is very important. And I'm not sure that we should remember Achilles as being a pretty boy. We should remember as him being
a really
tough boy.
Well, he had that heel. That was the only vulnerable part
right,
of him.
Right, yeah.
Because his mother didn't have the presence of mind to hold his toe.
Yeah. And okay. I remember when Troy came out and I having the same question about casting, which to me, I know it may seem superficial, is very important to me. Getting the right person, the right actor to play that role seems just important to me. As it turns out, Pitt comported himself pretty well in Troy.
Yeah. Avatar?
Right. All right.
Okay. Yeah, it's got it. It was a CGI, but But it's, if you reject that, now we're going to get down home and dirty here. Oh, brother, where art thou?
Oh, great adaptation of Homer. Excellent choice.
My daughter was a classics major in college, and she said, oh, that's the Odyssey. And I said, no. I don't see it. And she said, no, it's totally the Odyssey. And I love that movie, and I've seen it many times, and I'm like, I see, you know, odds to the different challenges that they have.
But I'll tell you.
I can't see anything but the three boys.
Oh, brother, where art thou made me a Clooney devotee.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea that he had the comic capability that he has in O Brother.
And he can sing.
He can. And the Coen brothers can direct.
Yeah.
That is a great modern choice for that.
Yeah.
With what I don't think Homer has a whole lot of humor. I'm trying to remember his humorous elements, and I don't find too many of them.
Well, he was just a narrator of a tale long told that he articulated on.
Now, there's one you didn't mention, Counselor.
Ha!
And that's because you probably thought, well, this is a given. Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, I didn't think of it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Would you agree that it's
I would. Oh, yeah.
If we had people pass through here and we asked them about epic, they would more than likely mention Gone with the Wind because it has that expansiveness. It's certainly a commentary on the South, the deterioration of the South. It has the love element, which our Odyssey has between Penelope and Odysseus. So it has a lot of those qualities to it.
Yeah. Burning Atlanta. I mean, how did they convince the city of Atlanta to allow themselves to be burned again for the movie? I don't understand.
Right, yeah.
It looked like the whole thing was going. Okay.
One you didn't mention either. And it perhaps is because you don't see its lead character as epic, just in metaphorical size. Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah, you're right. That was for sure.
And would you agree that it qualifies?
Oh, yeah, totally, totally. In the frozen house with icicles and traveling across the snow.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
The lost love, the poet is a hero. It's a really nice touch.
Yeah.
And here again, Omar Sharif is not that big a guy, so I don't have my superficial.
He's battling
quality.
The whole Soviet system.
He is, right. And there you go. When you want to talk about the scope of it, it's the Russian Revolution we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Very nice. Again, David Lean, who has a particular gift, along with his Lawrence of Arabia, of creating epics. One that I thought fit a bit with our Odyssey, in some way, Spartacus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
With Kirk Douglas. Yeah.
I actually thought of Kirk. Well, I looked, and he was in the Odyssey in the 60s, I guess. But in any event, and I didn't think of him at all in Spartacus, because that truly was. Although I was talking about Spartacus with somebody the other day, and maybe I was thinking about it after I saw the Odyssey.
Yeah. Give me your thoughts. Did you ever see Braveheart?
Yeah.
And William Wallace's Revolution against the English.
Yeah, that would be an epic.
I think so, too. Although nobody but my friend Robin would bring that up immediately.
In terms of the scope, I think part of an epic is the traveling, and part of the epic is the going from here to there, overcoming all these obstacles. And certainly William Wallace was overcoming all these obstacles, but they're kindly confined to above Hadrian's Wall. That's where the battle is going on, and it's more local.
More of a battle-related. Yeah, great.
In terms of Spartacus, again, it's in Italy, with what became Italy, but it's in the Roman Empire that's happening. So, but yeah,
time when I was a teen and you were not a teen, which was at our time, could have defined epic.
Mm-hmm.
That's how simple we were. In 1959, Ben-Hur.
Now, that's got scope, yes.
Yeah.
From Palestine to Rome and the chariot race always comes in.
Yeah, well, it does. Yeah. But that's part of that dynamic, visual.
Well, and I immediately dismissed things like the Bible. You know, I was thinking about, not that it wasn't good or anything. It's just No, that's not what I'm thinking of. But
that's
Ben-Hur was in that kind of category.
It's not Homer. That's a great point. But Ben-Hur was, when I was growing up, just the definition of it. I have another one, more modern. Okay. 1972, Godfather. Uh-oh, you're hesitating. There you go. Tell me.
Well, it certainly turned into a trilogy. So like Kurosawa's trilogy movie, so there's that. I'm not saying that's what makes
it.
But the scope of the movie, there is. Yeah, I'd say it's an epic.
Yeah, I think it has that historic.
It feels like it now that I'm thinking about sitting there through it. It feels like an epic movie.
There's just something about it that's very weighty. It seems to reflect our times as we're looking at the various wars that have been involved in up to that point. It certainly seems to have relevance and political relevance, except for some of the executions. It doesn't have the bombastic magnificence of some of the others that we've talked about. There's so much quiet that's going on there. Coppola.
It's dirty little things happening.
It really is. It really
is. It's dirty. Let's go to the toilet and get the gun.
That is a good one. Yeah. All right. There's one that I have forgotten.
Well, there was the battle between the mobs, though, so that was grand scale. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right. Good.
Okay.
My final choice here, and one that I think you'll agree with me, and one that has Matt Damon in it as well, and this would be Saving Private Ryan. Do you think it has that? And you're pausing, so I'm glad that I brought that up to you.
Yeah, I don't see it as an epic. People are going, they're journeying.
They're journeying,
and there's all this adversity, and it's all in the context of the war, and it's the constant same.
Yeah, but for battle scenes, it's hard to beat.
Yeah.
The Omaha Beach business. It's hard to beat anything that brilliant.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg.
But not everything has to be an epic in order to be a wonderful movie.
No, without question. Roger Ebert would say that it's the ideas that are epic, not necessarily the visuals.
Yeah.
And I think he may have caught something there. Epic because of its subject matter.
It's important.
It's
grand. It's a big vision. I should have added that to my list. It's a big vision of the hero, really.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've exhausted our listeners.
We've gone in one of our top time. All right. Gary Hammond, the movie is The Odyssey. Now, what do you advise? We have very few very good films at this time. What do you advise about The Odyssey with a family in mind? Since we do have the home motif we found so pervasive in current movies, but yet we have it in The Odyssey. And what do you recommend?
Well, you say with the family, it might be PG-13. I don't know whether it is because there's certainly plenty of violence.
Yeah.
But I would think it would be young teenage boys would enjoy it, I think.
Good.
Yeah,
good. Thank you.
Yeah. I liked it so much, I'm going to go see it in IMAX.
Right, okay.
Not because it wasn't great on the silver screen as it was at Lenox, or at the Phoenix Theaters in the Lenox Shopping Mall. It was wonderful, but I just want to feel that IMAX feel. And I'm sort of, now that I've brought up Avatar as an epic, you know, that was a really grand experience, and I've seen parts of Avatar on streaming services, and it loses so much. So I would suggest seeing The Odyssey in a theater rather than waiting for a streaming service.
And I'm with you. Teens and above, a really good family adventure. An important thing to do beforehand is to discuss its plot. You're not revealing anything to discuss it with younger people.
Right.
And perhaps prepare them for the epic nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
Prepare them for its relevance even to current times. when we're talking about war and tyrants and so on. But a good discussion beforehand will really help some of the younger members of the family.
For younger people, the mission might help. Not sure.